Okay, so welcome everybody. We have as our guest speaker today is Tracy Harrison, and Tracy has been with the WLGO group before in terms of sharing nutritional information with us and nice little bite sizes for us to digest. But today we have the pleasure of her giving us a nice extended presentation on the topic of energy and the recipe for all the energy that you need. And Tracy has such an incredible expertise and passion for the work that she does. It really is an honor to have her here today and for her to be sharing her expertise and her passion with us. And with that, I would just like to say thank you again, Tracy, for being here. And I'm going to turn everything over to you so that you can walk through the foils. And for those who are joining us via teleconference only and looking through the foils themselves, you know, it will just please try to follow along. And Tracy, if you can just mention, you know, what page number you're on, that will help orient people to the presentation if they are not on SoCoCo.
Okay, I will do that. Excellent.
Okay.
All right, well, welcome everyone. As you're settling in and getting comfortable adjusting your headset, just by way of introduction, my name is Tracy Harrison, and I am a member of the LFM class of 92. And after a 16-year career in high tech, in the semiconductor industry, both with Digital Equipment Corporation and Intel Corporation, I decided to completely change my life. I quit Intel and went back to school to capitalize and build my own company and my own business in nutrition and wellness support. And it's been a wonderful transformation, a great change for me, and I've certainly been able to build upon the extensive mentoring and coaching and presentation skills I picked up in the corporate world to now help, in many cases, people who are in the corporate world have the energy and the vitality and the wellness they need to really apply their passion every day. And when Michelle and I were talking about the topic that would be of most interest today, I think the thing I hear most often from folks is the need for more energy. I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling lethargic. I get zapped during the day. I have an 11 a.m. or a 3 p.m. slump. And so my intention today is to give you what I have learned in my practice in the past several years are some all-natural, no-gimmick, low-stress solutions for energy that are not artificial, that are not short-term, that you can really lean on to truly transform the amount of energy you have in your life. And we do have a bit of time, so I'm going to cover a number of ideas. And certainly, if we were to try and cover everything that I've seen work successfully about energy, we would need about 3 days. But today, my intention is really not so much to educate you as it is to hopefully inspire you. I don't think that any of us lack for ideas and solutions on how we could be healthier and happier and more energetic. What we struggle with is the commitment to ourselves or the prioritization to actually do something about it, to actually make change in our lives, to actually implement what we've learned. So my hope today is that out of everything I talk about, that you identify at least one, just one thing that I cover that's inspiring to you, that you think you could implement in your life for having more energy beginning today. So I'll ask you to just put your ear to the ground and really be looking for what is that one thing for you. Now, we do have the benefit of a small group today, so I do want to keep this as informal as possible and simply ask you to interrupt me as we're going along with any questions you might have. All right, so we're going to get started. I'm going to turn over to page 2 because I want to talk for a moment about what I mean by energy. Because in general in the American culture, we tend to think of energy as being the ability to pull out all the stops and get something done. This is Webster's definition of energy here. The issue with that I find is that we often focus on one-time, intense, single impulses of effort. I've got to just get through this project. Or I really need a big burst of energy for this particular assignment, or this particular presentation, or this particular meeting. What we don't tend to focus as much on, I think as a culture, is what I call vitality, which is not just the ability to sustain single bursts of effort, but how to have sustained, long-term, ongoing energy. And so in that sense, the solutions I want to propose to you today are very much about sustained energy, not something that you can get by getting a large coffee or by hitting the vending machine and getting a candy bar or any of the other myriad type of one-stop stimulant hits that we might pursue as Americans. But how can we really have sustained energy that will carry us for the long haul? And I think it's important to understand why this is key in our culture. There is so much out there that makes us feel drained or depleted. And I just want to learn a little bit from you as we get started here and ask some of you please to just think about it for a moment and share with the group, what takes away your vitality? What keeps you from having good, sustained energy in your life?
Do you want us to answer?
Please, yes. Absolutely. Just toss things out.
You know, so this is Michelle, by the way, Michelle Sakura. The thing that drains me, it sounds kind of funny, but it's lack of sleep. But then it's also emotional things, too. It's like, oh, I got a major setback. How do I recover from it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Two very common things. And sleep is really crucial. We're going to come back to that.
Well, this is Shaheen, and this is kind of inevitable, but I wanted to throw it out there anyway. I have an infant, about 8 months, just started sleeping through the night, so I'm finally sleeping a little more, but I'm nursing, I'm working full-time, and, you know, it's a drain. It's a physical toll as well as, obviously, all the other things that get involved, and so I just, I'm struggling. They, you know, it's simple things, like I don't even have time to eat enough. So, that's me.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing. It's so true. I mean, those are responsibilities, the caring for others, and that takes time, it takes energy, it takes focus, and it pulls us away from things we can do to nurture ourselves. What else? Who else has something to share?
This is Shefali. Just worry. I know you're not supposed to sweat the small stuff, but a lot of times I feel like I do anyway.
I think that's one that we can probably all relate to. When we worry about things, our body sends out a cascade of all sorts of stress hormones that physically deplete you. They actually work on our metabolism through our thyroid gland as well and suppress your metabolism. Leads to a tendency to gain weight, to be lethargic, to have less energy. I think that's a very important one. That's powerful. What else? What else takes away your vitality or makes you feel drained or depleted that you face in your life?
This is Michelle. Parrish. I'd say for me the biggest one is like if there's conflict or just like an energy presence, somebody's energy is really negative. Those are two big things for me.
And a great example, Michelle, of what I see all the time in my practice, the mind-body connection is so incredibly powerful. Our body absolutely registers pretty much instantaneously our emotional reaction to energy in a room, in a conversation, in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So these are all really great examples of some of the things that bring us down. I just want to add to that with what I see all the time are some of the features of modern life, if you will. One is certainly the ever-increasing pace of life. And this is a huge part of American culture. We are constantly going and doing and going and doing and going and doing and going and doing, and it seems as though it's never enough. as though life is a race. We are pleased to find more and more avenues for multitasking and for getting things done as fast as possible. And this is certainly true in the corporate world. Faster is almost always better. Faster is more heavily rewarded. Faster earns more accolades and appreciation and potentially promotion or more responsibility. Generally speaking, we have higher expectations across the board. The media certainly influences this quite a bit. And we've developed a number of technological solutions in order to support this culture, in order to support this drive. What I find interesting is how often the phrase time-saving devices is used as a description for something like a BlackBerry. I don't know about you, but I find nothing time-saving about my BlackBerry. In general, we've become very open to being available all the time, 7x24, available to our family, available to our friends, available to our supervisors, to our employees. There is no time to decompress. We have access to information and communication and knowledge all the time. And so we tend to want to seize that. And for all of the reasons that everyone just well described, that drains us tremendously. Because there's no time, there's no opportunity. We struggle to make the window of time to take care of ourselves and to replenish that energy so we actually have more to give the next day. And while a lot of these technological types of solutions and devices have certainly given us unprecedented access to each other and in some cases productivity, what we've also seen in our culture, particularly in the past two decades, is unprecedented levels of stress, depression, disease, and low energy. And I could share all sorts of startling statistics, even in terms of depression that requires medication, has increased more than 50-fold in the past 30 years. I believe the current statistic is pushing 40% of the American adult population needs to be on an antidepressant of some kind. In their adult years. It's really pervasive. And I'm going to talk today about what I have seen are some of the drivers behind this, some of the day-to-day choices we make exacerbate all of these outcomes. Because in general, Americans are not living a life of high vitality. We are trying to make up for our lack of vitality by living a caffeine-pumped, sugar-fueled, adrenaline-surging, stress-flooded emergency of a life where we're just constantly pushing ourselves and using all of these stimulants as a way of giving ourselves fake energy rather than real vitality. In addition to that, there are all sorts of physical stresses that we deal with. Mental stress is emotional. The amount of noise that's in our environment is incredible. Increasingly, there are more and more chemicals in our environment that contribute a major toxic load to our bodies. I am constantly helping people dealing with heavy metal or organic toxicity and how that's connected to chronic disease. We introduce just short of 2,300 new chemicals a year on average since World War II, and they work our way into our body. So the bottom line is that life is stressful. And I think we struggle with this. I think, as everyone well said, we struggle to find practical solutions for that. And in general, the American approach tends to be to either just throw up our hands in frustration, like our little stress reduction kit here on page 7, or we take the approach of needing to get away from it all. You know, once or twice a year, we take 2 weeks to completely decompress and try to make up for the lack of energy that we've experienced in the prior year. And that certainly has a short-term benefit. But at the end of the day, it's not getting us to a place where we're actually creating this type of sustainable energy on purpose. Because the default in American culture is not about vitality. It's really about this zapping of energy that requires stimulants, that requires caffeine, that requires antidepressants, that requires sleep aids, that requires lots amounts of sugar. And so what I want to do here is just kind of pause for a moment and see if there are any comments on this. Based on your input before, I'm sure you can relate to this. Does anyone have anything else they want to share or ask a question?
I like your stress reduction kit. but I've certainly seen that. Tracy, this is Michelle Sapir, and I think you know, part of the reason I'm doing what I do now is because I was on that treadmill, and I hated it. Mm. And I can certainly agree or certainly empathize with, I think it was Shaheen who said you've got a 8-month-old who's nursing. I totally get it. So actually, I like your emphasis on vitality rather than energy. But I agree. What do you do?
Great. Yeah, thanks. That's well said.
Well, and I would add to that, Tracy, and say, you know, I'm another person who left the corporate arena and I'm in private practice, and you have more control over your schedule and time and all, and I would say, you know, sleep is a huge factor that I get. Well, nowadays I actually get the right amount of sleep, more sleep. When I was in my first year with my baby, you know, that wasn't the case, and I experienced sleep deprivation for the first time, truly, you know, chronic sleep deprivation. And to me, what I've discovered is how amazingly impactful that is to my entire body and how I feel, my energy levels, my stamina, and all these things. And it's just, it's the biggest, one of the biggest modulators beyond, you know, the food that I'm feeding myself and, like, the energy around me and exercise. Those are my four big levers. And, you know, if any one of them is, you know, not in the right place, I feel it in my body. Sometimes severely.
Excellent. That's great. I often find once you allow yourself to come off of the treadmill, that your body and in some sense your spirit resists you taking that back. Once you find an arena of peace and what I like to call wellness, because people can be quote unquote healthy and not be well at all. And that's very much a combination, not just of your body, but of your mind and your spirit, your outlook. And I think both you and Michelle Sequeira are great testaments to making conscious and admittedly difficult choices in order to shift your lives around completely, in order to prioritize your wellness and how that affects your family also.
I like what you said about how it's like your body knows and remembers. Like once it knows what it's supposed to get, it will demand it.
No, we're not going back to that again.
Right.
Exactly. So let me dive into some specific suggestions. And in the beginning, I want to talk specifically about eating on purpose because I find this is perhaps the easiest category to tackle. And I have some specific recommendations for you that perhaps might be new to you and in some cases really go counter to a lot of the typical health media myths that are promoted. I want to start, first of all, by talking about the importance of breakfast, because certainly my experience in the corporate world is that the average American experiences a little bit of a nightmare first thing in the morning. Contrary to common understanding, when we are asleep, the body is not still in any way. The hypothalamus in your brain literally turns off your motor functions, which is why if you have a nightmare, it's hard to move your arms and legs all of a sudden. But it does that in order to keep you still so that your body can go into a huge cascade of chemical detoxification, hormone regeneration, nutrient conversion, nutrient absorption. Your body is incredibly busy in the middle of the night, both with mental cleanup and physical cleanup, and trying to prepare you for the next day to have a very high energy, high vitality day. You are actually being prepared for that. And first thing in the morning is the best opportunity you have to communicate to your body whether or not your world is one of tranquility and abundance, where your body can really allow you to have high energy and to feel great? Or is your world one of crisis and famine that your body needs to protect you from? And one of the most effective ways your body protects you is to cut back on your energy to conserve nutrition because of a crisis. And that explanation surprises a lot of people. The body has an incredible amount of intelligence that thankfully we don't actively control, involuntary intelligence and adjustment of our body to our environment. And while we have a lot of modern American lifestyles and options, the body is a very old thing. Humans have been evolving for tens and tens of thousands of years in our current form. And while food is available all the time now, it was only as recently as a couple of hundred years ago that food was uncertain. And early man had to withstand a tremendous amount of famine. And one of the best ways that our bodies adapted to do that is through the ready storage of fat for energy in the face of a famine, and the regular reduction of metabolism by affecting the thyroid to protect us from crisis. And so to the extent that we make choices in our life that communicate to our body that we're living in a world of famine and crisis, our body's going to keep trying to protect us from ourselves. And the average American morning, I have learned, first of all, most people awaken to a heart-pounding, death-defying sound, an alarm clock, or an alarm radio. So you're awakened out of this very peaceful slumber cocoon, total panic. We awaken with our heart racing. And some people bolt upright, you know, what's going on, what's going on? You slam the alarm clock, maybe you snooze and do it repeatedly. You get up, your kids are yelling, the dog is barking, you're rushing around, you're taking a shower, you're getting dressed, you're putting on makeup, you're shaving, you're getting the lunches ready, you got to find the money, you got to check your email, what appointment are you running late for, where are the car keys? And you're rushing out the door, and maybe the best you can do is snag a cup of coffee or a glass of juice, and then you go, I will get in the Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru. Where the average American is going to have a large cup of caffeine and some kind of doughy thing. Now, this is a bagel, a donut, a Danish, a Pop-Tart, a pastry, some toast, a bar, some cereal, some type of refined carbohydrate snack. And the issue is that combination of things does a really great job of communicating to our body that there's a crisis going on. Because there's nothing nutrient dense and physically calming about a snack of refined carbohydrates. Caffeine, especially if it's a big dose of it, you know, the extra large, big gulp size coffee, does a tremendous job of artificially stimulating our adrenal gland and sending out an artificial surge of adrenaline that makes us feel all pumped up, which we think feels good, but to our body, the body starts looking for the crisis that's caused that adrenaline. Early man, generally speaking, did not live a very stressful life. It was a very peaceful life, punctuated by occasional moments of terror. I mean, for the most part, our lives were about eating and building fires and caring for each other, punctuated by moments of being attacked by a wild animal or having your village raided by some type of marauder. This is how our genes have developed. And generally speaking, now we have that type of crisis every day, or we have a physical reaction to it when we can't find our car keys. And so we want to have a new way of living based on our modern lifestyle, but we have very old genes and very old, well-developed, well-evolved physical symptoms that are trying to save us from ourselves. And in particular around body fat, I talk with a tremendous number of people who, whether they are underweight or overweight, are trying to be leaner, trying to lose body fat. And we think of fat as perhaps being negative or in some cases even evil. But you have to realize from your body's perspective, fat is a blessing. Fat is the only way your body has to store energy for the long haul. And if your body believes that there's a lot of crisis and famine in your life to protect you from, it's going to do a really good job of packing on a lot of fat to save you from yourself. especially fat around your midsection. So the message here, I think, is clear. It's very important that we eat breakfast, a real meal, every single day. And it's also important that this meal not just be some kind of carbohydrates, but to include protein and fat. And there's a simple graph here, I'm on page 13, that shows you what's happening in your metabolism. When you eat a large serving of carbohydrates, even if they're quote-unquote healthy carbohydrates, or if you eat even a small serving of rapidly digested carbohydrates, like that plain bagel, the sugars in those carbohydrates are metabolized and absorbed into your blood very rapidly, in some cases even more rapidly than white table sugar. And what you get is a huge surge of blood glucose. Now, the body does not want to have sugar in the blood. It lowers the pH and makes your blood quite acidic. And so the body, particularly the pancreas, secretes an hormone called insulin, whose job is to escort the sugar out of your blood and into the cells. In the absence of insulin, you cannot actually get sugars into your cells where they can be used for fuel. The problem is that the pancreas is designed to secrete a burst, a surge of insulin that matches the surge of sugars that come into your blood. Now, up until about 300 years ago, this was not a problem because we didn't even have access to sugars, and we certainly didn't have access to white flour or French fries and potato chips and white rice and these other kinds of foods that in quantity can cause a big spike in blood sugar. For the most part, we lived according to the graph on the right, where we would have small meter doses of insulin that would do a good job of bringing down your blood sugar to a baseline level that would allow you to relax and forget about food and have steady state energy for multiple hours. The problem we experience today, as you can see on the graph on the left, is that we eat foods or quantities of food that cause spikes. And what the pancreas secretes is an overcompensation of insulin that does too good of a job. And rather than just driving your blood sugar down to a baseline level, it plummets down to a low level that can actually, if extreme, can send you into what is called a hypoglycemic state. This is why you would get particularly jittery or dizzy or really, really irritable or feel very vulnerable in between meals, is because your blood sugar has gone way too low. And the body will compensate for that by making you crave things like a muffin, a Danish, a donut, more of these kind of refined carbohydrates. We think about low blood sugar as being annoying. Your body thinks low blood sugar is a crisis because you can die from low blood sugar. And it's a major source of carbohydrate cravings. I often hear people say, you know, I must have a fast metabolism because I had a whole plain bagel for breakfast and, you know, I'm hungry like an hour and 45 minutes later. That's actually not a hunger for calories. That is a hunger for your body craving a fix, a sugar fix. A plain bagel has about 550 calories. There is no way that you need more calories 2 hours later unless you started running from the drive-thru right after you finished eating it. But we live in this this general lifestyle, American diets, that cause these constant spikes and lows and spikes and lows that by the end of the day leave us completely exhausted. The energy slump that happens for many people around 3 p.m. is the graph on the left happening as a result of a very high carbohydrate lunch. The typical American lunch of a sandwich that has big pieces of bread, maybe some chips, maybe some pasta salad, maybe a piece of fruit, maybe some juice, maybe a soda, a huge amount of carbohydrates and probably easily digested ones that right on cue send us into a low around 3 p.m. So obviously, a big part of the solution here is to eat in a way that causes our body to respond as you see on the right, not on the left. And eating a breakfast that has a metered smaller insulin response is very key to avoiding the cycling of cravings and energy slumps throughout the day. So eating breakfast every day, including protein and fat, and opening up your mindset as to what an acceptable breakfast is. It's interesting. We are one of the very few cultures that across the board believes that a good breakfast is some kind of flowery thing. I have learned through my studies, I mean, the average Asian is eating perhaps fish and vegetables for breakfast. The average European is eating cold meat and cheese. The average South American is eating beans, maybe some squash or tortilla. It's only a fairly modern practice that we started looking toward these flowery or sweet things for breakfast. And when we add healthy fat and protein, a good dose of it to our body, we stimulate our body's fat burning capability through the secretion of glucagon, which happens as a result of eating protein. And we also help to suppress the insulin response so that we're not hungry for a fix a couple of hours later. So there's all sorts of different ideas and things that you can try, but it's important that breakfast be a meal and that it never be a meal you skip. If you're going to skip a meal, skip dinner. Breakfast is by far the most important meal for anchoring your energy. Now, related to that is about when we eat our food. Most Americans eat in a way that causes their body to run on credit, if you will, throughout the day. We have a tiny or no breakfast, or what we do causes that spike and then a low, which leads us to what I call the drive-through hour, where people are looking for a fix mid-morning, which leads into a lunch that is also maybe a more of a medium-sized meal, but again, carbohydrate-laden. We get that dreaded post-lunch slump, which leads us into the vending machine hour. And then we're looking for another fix, another low to address, like around 5 p.m., which is when most people are commuting home, which is why when we get home, many of us can sit down and eat a whole bag of something while we're preparing dinner, because there's another low. And then for the average American, over 50% of our day's calories are consumed 5 p.m. or later. But what are we going to do later in the evening? For the most part, we're going to sit on the couch and relax. And that huge meal is just going to be saved as fat on our body. And then we may end up having, a late night snack. You know, we finally made it through the day. This tends to be comfort food, more like chocolate or ice cream. Because we're exhausted, we asked our body to run on way too many sugar swings throughout the day, and we backloaded our food, even though we were front-loading our energy requirements. So not only does this potentially lead to quite a bit of fat gain in addition to weight gain, but it's also a recipe for exhaustion, poor digestion, and poor sleep because digestion is competing with sleep. So one of the most powerful things you can do to increase your energy throughout the day is to front load your food instead of rear loading your food. And that simply stated is trying to invert the typical American habit of front-loading the food and aiming to eat approximately three-quarters, certainly the vast majority of your day's food, by mid-afternoon. And this is the way an awful lot of the world eats. It's just not an American practice. So in my experience, a great way to do that is to always have breakfast, always make it a meal. To have lunch be by far the most significant meal of your day. That's when actually the time of day that your body physiologically is best suited for digesting anyway. And then having a light dinner. Over time, having it become the smallest meal of the day. And having it not be the time of day that you choose to have big doses of refined carbohydrates, like a big plate of pasta or a big pizza. Because in general, that's just going to encourage your body to store a lot of fat, a lot of body fat. and generally trying to give yourself a break from food in the few hours before you go to bed so that when you actually go to sleep, there's no heavy digestion competing with the detoxing that your body wants to do in the middle of the night. Very powerful concepts here. I've seen both of these things really transform lives. And you have to start where you are. So if today your habit is to completely skip breakfast, then it's a major step in the right direction for you to have breakfast, period. Just getting up and having a whole grain English muffin with maybe some almond butter on it is fantastic. That is much better than not having anything. So there's an opportunity here to really feed your body what it needs at the time that it needs. All right, so let me pause here for a minute and see if there are any questions, comments.
Tracy, this is Michelle. One question I have that I'm still trying to work through is kind of okay. How to, it's not so much even distribute the calories, but figure out what's the really the right or optimized calorie intake for me each day so that I do, you know, avoid those times where you get really hungry, right, and then you start to eat a lot more than you need. So any recommendations on how do you ideally figure out the calorie intake that you should have given your activity levels and age and weight and all that?
That's a great question, Michelle. And actually, my experience is that if you will begin, if you will move away from the blood sugar cycle, so that hunger is not being fueled by blood sugar lows, then you can really trust your body to eat when you want to eat. And that is a huge source of freedom, especially for women, because for many of us, we can become a little bit obsessed with counting things. And I try really hard to not promote obsessive views about food. I think we already as a culture do that too much. You know, we're counting calories, we're counting serving size, we're counting carbs, we're counting fat. And I think it tends to drive a little bit of a love-hate relationship with food and eating. And my experience is that if you will begin to front load and you work to buffer the meals and the snacks that you eat so that you don't have the big blood sugar swings, you can actually trust your hunger and eat when you're hungry. And I know that's not a quantitative answer to your question, because I think trying to micromanage counting to a certain calorie amount is ineffective. And I'll tell you why. They did a great study, actually, with registered dietitians even, to try to determine how well they could guess how many calories they actually consumed. And you can imagine, this is a registered dietitian's kind of glee fest. Of course I know how many calories I consume. Well, they found out that on average they were off by 20%. And these are people who are micro-trained in the particular nutrients in food. I just don't think we have the ability to effectively micromanage what we eat through counting anything. But our body knows what it needs. And if we can get some of these stimulant drivers out of the way and some of these well-honed genetic needs and responses to crisis out of the way, you can just rely on your body and feel more comfortable about food.
I really like that message. And I would also say one thing you're saying that's reinforcing me to eat, like, eat this bigger lunch and be okay with eating more in the afternoons is I do find if I do that, you know, I am not as hungry at night. And I think it's just if you can kind of remember, don't eat such a big dinner, right? You know, especially if you've eaten all, just kind of mentally, instead of having to track the calories, I would just say, you know, I'm going to eat a lighter dinner. I think that could work. But I absolutely have experience what you're saying as far as if you really load up on lunch and in the afternoon, you know, you don't need it in the evening.
Right.
And good. And
absolutely. That's great. And as a point of transition, if you will begin to have that bigger breakfast, and if you will allow yourself to have a good balanced snack, again, something that has protein and fat in it, not just carbs, at around 3 in the afternoon, you'll be amazed at how unhungry you are in the evening. Many times people still struggle with eating in the evening because we've had a really stressful day and we're eating for entertainment. We're eating for soothing. we're eating for companionship, and which is a totally different issue. That has nothing to do with your metabolism, but it does expose those emotional drivers for eating so that you can get some help with getting to the other side of those.
Tracy,
I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great question.
Sorry.
Please, go ahead.
Michelle Sequeira. I was wondering if you had any guidelines around the protein and fat, because I'm sure if I showed this to my husband, he'd be like, oh, great, bacon. It would be a great way to start the day. I'm sure there's a limit to what you mean when you say including protein and fat, for example, in a breakfast or even a lunch.
That's a great question. Actually, if you do well with, you know, animal foods, and I don't have a problem with eating bacon at all. I think that the health media has made us a little psycho-fearful of fat, especially of saturated fat. And I could do a whole seminar on that. In fact, you know, Walter Willett, the director of nutrition at Harvard, has actually come out very vocally on many occasions and said that the whole low-fat is good health mantra, in his opinion, is responsible for the obesity epidemic, because we turned away from nourishing fats that even in small quantities are very filling. They're very satisfying. They trigger a hormone in our brain called leptin that tells us we can stop eating because we feel great. We feel sated. Turning away from those, we turned more toward, you know, sugar and salt and other things. So I'm not against bacon at all. My important, I guess, tenet is looking for high-quality animal products, really looking for hormone and antibiotic-free, preferably also nitrate and nitrite-free, preservative-free bacon, so just high-quality food. I think that's fine. Unlike carbohydrates, the body actually has pretty good built-in limiters for fat and protein. You can only eat so much of it before you start to feel gross, and you just don't want any more. If you've been depriving yourself of fat for a long time, you could probably eat quite a bit of bacon just because your body is depleted. It is deprived, and it needs more fat than it's getting on a regular basis. But for a sustained maintenance diet, your body will signal to you that it's had enough. You will physically feel that. The issue is that with carbohydrates, we don't have any kind of built-in physical limitation for that, which is why when we've had a bad day, most of us could polish off an entire bag of Doritos without thinking about it. There is no built-in limiter for that type of thing. So, you know, if you enjoy bacon, have some bacon. We have also really vilified eggs in the media, and there is no research showing that eating eggs kills people. I'm sorry to say that is not the case. You hear it on TV a lot, but there is no scientific research showing that that is the case. And a huge part of wellness is separating the kind of myth messages in marketing from what's actually proven out in science. So, you know, eggs, bacon, nut butters, these are all great things to enjoy. You know, avocado, fish, chicken, healthy,
so like,
you know, oil.
It sounds like basically you're saying don't worry so much about the food as long as it's high-quality food, and then just trust your body to tell you when you've had enough.
Exactly. But you have to get beyond the blood sugar swings, because if your body is still being driven by these insulin curves that I talked about before, then you're going to overeat. You're going to overeat the wrong thing also because of blood sugar cycles, not because of hunger. So you have to work your body through blood sugar stability first and work on front loading, and then absolutely eating becomes a source of freedom because you can trust your body.
That sounds like amazingly liberating. You have no
it
idea.
Is. It is. It is. I appreciate so much because, you know, been here, done this. I used to be 40 pounds heavier than I am now. I used to be a total slave to food. I had terrible hypoglycemic, you know, kind of ups and downs. I've been there, and it does not have to be that way. It really doesn't.
Tracy, this is Shaheen. I don't mean to play the devil's advocate, but I have a couple practical questions for you and just wonder
sure.
your thoughts about them. So I feel strongly that we should eat whole foods and that, you know, we should have lean or healthy proteins and, you know, try to cook as much as we can.
But inevitably, you know, my husband is happy to eat this food, but if I left meal planning to him, we'd be ordering pizza every day. So it just feels like another thing on my to-do list that I'm constantly thinking, you know, because it's obviously a little more work to, like, get the groceries and keep the vegetables fresh and, you know, plan the meal so that everything is constantly there when you're hungry and you want it. And it's just, you know, I think it certainly I see the benefits and I feel better physically when we do eat well. But at the same time, it's just another thing to do all the time. And, you know, I was wondering if you have any thoughts about, like, reasonable compromises or ways to make that work. Cause it's a daily process of, you know, what are we going to eat tomorrow? Do we have the food in the house? You know, when am I going to prep the vegetables?
Sure. I think it's a great question. It's a perfect question. And I think the most important thing to think about is what are your priorities? And it's important to have conversations, I think, with your partner or even as a family entirely. Is your priority eating or is it being well? Because if the priority is just eating, or even more, if the higher priority is working or, you know, other activities, then good food availability, it will by default fall to the bottom of the list. And it has to be not just a personal decision, but if you live with others, it has to be a partnership or a family commitment and agreement that we don't just want to eat, we don't just want to be fed, we want to be well. And we don't just want to be kind of okay healthy. We want to be optimally healthy. We want to have a ton of energy. Oh, my gosh. We want to be overflowing with energy and vitality so that we can better enjoy what we're doing in life. And then it just comes down to the choices that you make. I hear many times, and not that this is where you're coming from, but just to paint another example, people will say to me, I don't have time to eat breakfast in the morning. I said, okay, that's fine, but I'm just going to poke at your language. You don't make time. You choose not to have time to eat breakfast in the morning. And then I'll ask, do you take a shower? I'm like, of course I take a shower. I'm like, okay, so what you're saying is it's actually more important to you to not smell bad than it is to fuel your body. And it may seem like a simple example, but I think it's where the rubber hits the road. Where do we choose to spend the hours of the day we have? And what's important to us? Is it more important to watch a little more television or do a little bit more work than it is to feed ourselves and our families in a way that's going to make us feel not just okay but optimal? But I think to your point, you have to have the commitment and support of your whole family to do that in order to make it work, because otherwise it becomes your personal burden, and, yeah, that can become overwhelming. Now, having said that, you do the best you can every day. And there are going to be some days where it seems like everything, you know, kind of goes to hell in a handbasket and no plan worked out. And so it's really not about perfection. I think the victory is in persistence. And in order to really make this a new lifestyle, a new life habit, you have to accept the fact that some days are not going to be perfect. But persisting in the goal of eating just what you described, whole, natural, homemade foods. I work with families doing all sorts of different strategies in terms of getting the whole family involved and how to divvy up responsibilities. And I'm a big fan of cook once and eat three or four times. We should really make our cooking as efficient and high output as possible. Same thing with our shopping, so that it doesn't take more time than it really needs to. There's all sorts of great strategies there. But I do think persistence is much, much more important than perfection. So I took a different take on your question, but is that helpful? Are you still there, Shaheen? Are you there?
I am. Sorry, I keep muting so that I don't disturb anyone's background noise. No, it is helpful. I think it's, you're right, it's especially important to be realistic, that I think if you eat well 5 or 6 days out of the week and you have takeout Chinese on Saturday night, it's not the end of the world.
I agree, because you will also make yourself crazy trying to be perfectionistic about it, and you'll be much more likely to kind of hit the wall and just give up, period.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me push on, because there are a couple more things that I want to cover. I want to talk about sugar because this is a huge issue. I see this in clients all the time. The average American consumes over 185 pounds per person per year of sugar. And I'm not talking about the natural sugar that's in fruit, for example. I'm talking about added sweeteners, whether it's corn syrup or sugar or something else. Now, I just want to get a good visual on this. Imagine a 5-pound bag of sugar. You know, you can kind of put your hands out in front of you to imagine how big that is. 185 pounds a year is one of those about every 9 or 10 days. That's a huge amount of additional sweetener for something that has absolutely zero nutritive value to the body. And just to dial this down, this is about 48 teaspoons a day. And the big issue with this is that sugar, refined sweeteners, are toxic to the body. Now, I could regale you for an hour talking about how much havoc refined sugar and concentrated sweeteners wreak on our body. And interestingly enough, there's, in fact, a giant connection between sugars and arterial inflammation, which eventually leads to atherosclerosis and other types of cardiovascular crisis. The American Heart Association, which is a pretty conservative organization, has actually come out recommending that full-grown adults have no more than 6 or 9 teaspoons a day. But as you can see, that is many, many fold less than we actually consume on average. And so it's important, I think, to take a look at how much are you consuming. When you read a label on a product, 4 grams of sugar is a teaspoon. Your standard, I think it's a 20-ounce bottle of soda has 16 teaspoons of sugar in it. So if you have one, you know, Sprite or apple juice or vitamin water or Snapple iced tea or something like that, you've more than shot their suggestion of maximum sugar per day, and we haven't even talked about food yet. In fact, I'm going to skip through some of these just in the interest of time, but soda and similar sugary drinks are by far the greatest source of sugar in our diet. And a very simple change you can make in your life is moving away from flavored sugar water and choosing just to drink water or seltzer or tea or coffee in moderation. Food manufacturers know that sugar is addictive. We could do a whole seminar on the addiction of sugar. And so they use it liberally in foods as a way of keeping us addicted to them. And sugar shows up in places that might surprise you. This is a little yogurt smoothie. I know a lot of parents who would choose not to allow their children to have soda, but they would allow them to free feed on this type of smoothie drink. But ounce per ounce, the smoothie has significantly more sugar than the Coke. Many of these products are being increasingly marketed toward children, and manufacturers are adding more and more sugar as a way of enticing the taste buds of young people. But again, sugar causes those big spikes and then those troughs, which lead us to eat more and to not be able to trust our body's sense of food.
Tracy?
Yes.
This is Shefali. What are your thoughts on artificial sweeteners and products like stevia?
Yeah, great question. I am not in favor of any chemical artificial sweetener. I could talk about the physiological effects of all of them. Equal NutraSweet with repeated consumption acts as a neurotoxin.
You still there?
This is Michelle Parrish. I'm still here. I think we lost Tracy. Not sure. I see her still presenting in Sococo. We just lost her on the bridge.
Okay.
Who's still on the bridge, may I ask, please?
This is Michelle Sequeira.
Okay, Michelle.
Shefali,
okay.
Kathy Chang, I couldn't get into the office, but I've been listening to the audio.
Yeah, and I sent you a note on that, Kathy. Thanks for sticking with us. Anybody else still on the bridge?
Tracy just left the Cocoa.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Huh.
Could be her connection.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Hello?
Given that it, you know, it was both. Hi. We just
can you hear me?
Oh, yes,
this is
Tracy. Are you back? Oh, great.
Yes.
Right. We were trying to figure out what happened to you.
I have no idea. Everything just blipped. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, there's still several folks on the line, so we're all still listening. Are you there? Did we lose you again? Tracy? Huh. That's odd. Okay. She has blipped out again. I know we are at the top of the hour. Maybe I'll ask this question. I don't know if we'll get Tracy back again. Can anyone stay an extra few minutes for her to finish, or is pretty much everyone committed to meetings at the top of the hour?
I can stay a few extra minutes.
Okay, a couple minutes. Okay, great. Tracy, you're back with us? Oh, gosh, I think she just got in and got bumped one more time. That's what I heard. We'll give her, so let's do this. Let's give her another minute so she can't dial back in and be able to finish her presentation. This is an interesting problem. I've never had this one exactly. That's the interesting thing about hosting these conferences is almost every time you'll get some new or crazy technical little challenge, and they all sometimes they're unexplainable. Let's just put it that way.
While we're waiting for Tracy, Michelle, is there a place on the web that her presentation is that we can download for future reference?
Yes, there is. And actually what I did is I sent the link out to that in the Outlook, and so you can pull it up from there, and I will also send it out to the whole group with the audio. So
okay.
For it. Okay?
Sorry, everybody, for the technological problems. But anyway, I know we're out of time in general. So I want to respect that.
Well, Tracy, just so you know, there are a few people on the bridge said they could stay after a few extra minutes. I don't know if you can, but if you'd like to finish up, you have an audience.
Okay. All right, fine. Well, let me at least, I do want to answer the question about artificial sweeteners because I do think it is a common one. NutraSweet Equal penetrates the blood-brain barrier and has been shown to, with repeated consumption, cause myelin breakdown on neurons. Splenda is does not taste like sugar because it's made from sugar. It actually looks chemically an awful lot like fertilizer. It's a chlorinated molecule. The last thing we need is more chlorine in our bodies, but it does wreak a lot of gastrointestinal problems. I've worked with a number of clients who have IBS and all sorts of GI distress because of Splenda. I do, however, recommend what you mentioned, which is an herbal sweetener called stevia. Stevia is a low bush herb that has the unique characteristic of just tasting really sweet. You can buy tincture of that, an extract that's similar in concept to buying vanilla extract. It's just sweet, and it's a great alternative to use in tea or coffee or yogurt or smoothies or oatmeal or anything else where you look for a little sweetness. It does have a flavor, though, because it's an herb. So if you overuse it, it will be bitter. So just a few drops usually will do it. If you get a liquid tincture, 5 or 6 drops is the equivalent sweetness of a teaspoon of sugar. So I think that's a great tool, and you can use it to wean yourself down from expecting everything to taste really sweet. But I do believe you should still wean yourself down because that's the only way you're going to really appreciate and be satisfied with the sweetness in normal whole foods without having to seek sweet things all the time.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So I do want to, there are other concepts that are in the presentation, but in the interest of time, I'm going to skip to the end here because I do want to talk about sleep. And you all have access to the presentation, so you can take a look at the other things I put in there. But sleep really does need to be a priority. Not getting enough sleep will make you eat more than you need. It will make you crave sugar and caffeine and alcohol and crackers and cookies and chips and other things as a superficial, again, energy kick for the vitality you're missing because your body simply isn't rested. People who sleep less are more likely to develop type 2 diabetes. They are more likely to develop high blood pressure. They are more likely to become clinically depressed. They are more likely to develop anxiety and require medication for that. They are also likely to die earlier. As I mentioned in the beginning, sleep is not just downtime. Your body is physically repairing you. And as we all know, you can keep running the piece of equipment on the line over and over and over again and choose not to stop for maintenance. And you may get a short-term bang for that choice. But over time, you're going to pay for not doing the preventative maintenance on your body that it needs in order to last and provide you with good, strong vitality for the long haul. And we do a lot of things. This slide gives you some ideas. We do a lot of things that really infringe on our sleep, that really make it difficult to fall asleep or potentially stay asleep. But simply choosing to go to bed, you know, when you're up and doing that extra little bit of email or cramming in that one more television show, it's a great opportunity to stop and think, am I living on purpose right now? Am I making choices that are really about what I want? Or am I just defaulting into the decompression? Am I defaulting into what's happening, the easy choice, rather than doing what I really know is going to serve me the best? So I think I will leave it at that. But generally speaking, in summary, I know from experience, you do not have to be tired. You do not have to be exhausted. You do not have to live with blood sugar swings and cycles. You really can get to a place where you trust your body. And I'm very grateful for having a life and a career now where I help people do that. So if you have any follow-up questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. My email address and phone number are in the package on the last slide, so don't hesitate to be in touch if I can help you.
Thank you so much, Tracy. That was a very helpful, engaging presentation, really on target as always, and we just really appreciate your leadership and your being here to share your expertise. So thank you again, and thank you for everyone for hanging in there a little extra over the end, and we hope to hear from you in future sessions.
Great.
Bye. Have
Thanks.
A good afternoon. Okay.
Great. Thanks, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.